by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off with an interview that Alex had with Zay out of Italy. And it's concerning the strange figure that was seen walking inside of the cathedral during the fire, the Notre Dame fire. And then we're going to add some additional details about the pillar of the boatman at the end and talk a little bit about some of the historical aspects of the Notre Dame fire. But here's Alex interviewing Tergami. Here we go now.
There was also the sighting of a strange figure on top of the cathedral. While the whole place was going on fire, there was a very strange figure, and it was caught in front of the cameras of TVs worldwide. So I wanted to do a close-up of this figure, and of course some people can say it looks like the ghost of Osama bin Laden. No, it's not the ghost of Osama bin Laden, but it is a Knights Templar. That is actually a Knights Templar and how they used to dress back in the days. Now, we know there is a lot of stories about ghosts in Notre Dame, and so, but this one is pretty weird to see it in front of our eyes.
Leo Zagami from Italy joins us from Rome. Obviously, he is somebody that studies and writes about corruption in the Vatican, has been the vanguard of exposing it. I want to get his take right off the bat about Notre Dame, and within 30 minutes of the fire, we're told by corporate media everywhere, no Muslims, no Islam, no terror, don't ask questions, which really begs the question, what are they trying to cover up, Leah? Why are they up front saying something? Even Lou Dobbs came out and said, this looks political to say don't investigate Notre Dame.
It is more than political. It is something to do with one of the most sacred places of not only of Christianity, because it predates Christianity. It used to be the temple of Jupiter, and we know the close connection between Macron and Jupiter. The Notre Dame was even for a time taken over during the revolution in 1793 and transformed in the Temple of Reason. One thing is for sure, Notre Dame belongs for the last 100 years to the French government, but they have given a sort the possibility to the Catholic Church to use it. But it's the Catholic Church that theoretically, actually, should be responsible for this place, for the security, for the well-being of the people who visited, for everything. So there is something missing here. I mean, the Pope didn't intervene for a long time. He actually waited the day after to make a final statement on this tragic episode, which touches the most visited cathedral after St. Peter. So, I mean, it's very strange that Pope Francis didn't intervene. Of course, we have also the situation regarding the possible connections with Islamic attacks. I mean, there had been people that, of course, had attempted, Muslims that had attempted some kind of attacks on this church prior to this episode. So, of course, there is a lot of suspicion here. And in the mix of all this, there was also the sighting of a strange figure on top of the cathedral. While the whole place was going on fire, there was a very strange figure, and it was caught in front of the cameras of TVs worldwide. So I wanted to do a close-up of this figure, and of course some people can say it looks like the ghost of Osama bin Laden. No, it's not the ghost of Osama bin Laden, but it is a Knights Templar. That is actually a Knights Templar and how they used to dress back in the days. Now, we know there is a lot of stories about ghosts in Notre Dame, and so, but this one is pretty weird to see it in front of our eyes. So, I mean, of course, I wanted to point out on that. But also, is the period of time we are focusing on here, from the 15th of April to the 1st of May, every year we have massacres, we have very terrible events happening, because it coincides with then the culmination, which is, of course, between the 30th of April and the 1st of May, Beltane, this festival of ancient origins, where you, of course, set a bonfire. You set everything on fire. Now, of course, and these special bonfires were made so the ashes could have a sort of protective power. And this is very strange in this moment of time in which we have Macron's presidency so weak, and of course we saw the Yellow Vest marching for months against this.
Could this be a way to change the subject from the Yellow Vest and bring France together under globalist rule? Let's talk about it with Leo Zagami straight ahead. And who is that strange figure? Well, Leo Zagami, he's not part of the Vatican. Every time I say he is a Vatican insider, people go, oh, my God, you've got the evil Vatican leadership on. Remember when the Vatican is a consortium of a bunch of different vying groups? Anybody that studies history knows that. Like any other big historic organization, he's been a whistleblower, someone exposing it. And I used to read his stuff 15 years ago and couldn't believe a lot of it. It's all come true. He's very credible. And he joins us right now. You should visit his website, Leo Zagami, ZAGAMI.com, LeoZagami.com. You should get his books, all of it. He's really a smart guy, hasn't steered me wrong yet. But notice I said to him earlier, I said, what's behind this? It's very suspicious they're saying don't look at Islamic terror. It's very suspicious they're saying don't ask questions when the fire was only an hour old. And you've got Fox News, CNN cutting off French officials saying they're looking at Islam. You had 800 churches attacked, torched, you name it, in the last year. So even Lou Dobbs' question, you notice he didn't go right to what he thinks. He just went to the historical nature. And also, this was on multiple cameras. This bizarre person looks like Osama bin Laden or a Knights Templar going and hiding behind one of the pillars and then trying to run away like they didn't want to be videotaped. That just adds to who would want to act like that while a building is a towering inferno. There's a lot of sects and different orders, I know, hundreds of them that, you know, visit these facilities. But for him to have access to those upper areas, this is a pretty big deal. And I'm glad you hone in on that, because the media spun it. Oh, look, there's a Muslim, you know, up in the top. We don't know who it is, but it's someone in medieval garb or Middle Eastern garb. Or as you said, it looks, you're right, the white with the mailed arms and the top. It looks, when you really pause it, like a Knights Templar outfit, actually.
Yes, because the Knights Templar were for a long time in the Holy Land, so they used to wear a white turban, even if they were Christian. And so it actually looks like a Knights Templar, because the Knights Templars were the ones who actually financed this church, Alex. The church was built by operative Masons under the direction of Knights Templars, and it kind of took a long time, as we know, but in that time the Knights Templars were in charge. And then the last Grand Master of the Knights Templars, Jacques de Molay, was sentenced to death and burned in France.
Friday the 13th. What was that year? I forget. But right after they finished the cathedral, they killed him.
Well, that was the day they started the persecution. And then after, they killed him instead in March. On the 18th of March, they celebrated. The strange thing is that they started celebrating in the actual cathedral of Notre Dame. And I show this with a couple of links in my latest article. They have been the Knights Templars for the first time in 800 years, basically. 900 years have gone back to their place, because for a long time the Catholic Church, of course, had no intentions of letting the Knights Templars inside the church. But now I have showed with a lot of photos and a lot of links that this is happening. Since 2017, they have been regularly celebrating in Notre Dame Mass the Knights Templars, and this is kind of strange, of course, also in the looking at this image that we see. That I tell you, Alex, I'm not sure this image is of a terrestrial nature, because ghosts are real, and in such places they can appear. So
I was about to say, everybody says it looks like Bin Laden, but if you look closer, it looks like the mail hanging down, the mail on the arms. It looks like a Templar outfit.
And then there's another strange thing that happened. While all this was going on, for the first time in a long time, Pope Francis was with Pope Ratzinger, sitting in front of the TV. I showed it in an article posted that this was this rare meeting between the two popes. As the cathedral was burning, the two popes were meeting up. And
by the way, that's only happened a few times. You're right. That's really weird.
No, but also Pope Ratzinger was the last pope to actually visit and celebrate Mass in Notre Dame. And I showed with a video that was posted by Rome Reports just after the accident that the approach that Ratzinger had, of course, was much more traditional. The video you can find at the bottom of my article shows Ratzinger inside Notre Dame Cathedral. And what he was saying and his approach was completely different from a guy who is destroying the Catholic faith and the Christian faith. Ratzinger, of course, was not a perfect person. We know he had many faults, but he's a more conservative figure. Lately, we have seen how he has attacked the present situation regarding sexual abuse, and he has even discussed it in
a I know you don't like to speculate, but obviously them saying, don't say Islamic terror, don't say arson, when the flames are 400 feet tall, that says they're covering something up or at least wanting to control the narrative. What's your gut level? What's your intel on who could be behind this? As you said, Islamists have tried to attack it. They've been celebrating it in France. They've been celebrating it in Canada. They've been, you know, you've got university heads. You've got political people in Canada saying, good, burn it down.
Well, we have seen also a famous Catholic commentator who works for the Jesuits who said immediately after he tweeted and you reported with Paul Joseph Watson about it, and then he canceled his tweet because the Jesuits knew that something weird was going on. Of course, I think that the end purpose of all this is to destroy Christianity so they can build a temple that embraces this new religion, which is Islam.
By the way, that's on Infowars.com. Leftists are saying they want a New Age temple built on its place.
They want, of course, something different, and that's why they are destroying a symbol of Christianity to replace it instead with the symbol of a one-world religion that initially is called Islam, because the main two religions that are forming this alliance is, of course, the Vatican together with the rich oil emirates that are giving the money for this project. So I think that is the final take that I can model.
Well, you're saying evidence points towards insiders burning it down to turn it into a New Age temple.
Turning it in a temple of this new religion. You have to understand that Islam is a religion that is unifying more and more Catholicism with Islam, Christianity with Islam, because now all forms of Christianity are operating under the Pope. So this is really the eve of the one world religion. And of course, there is a lot of ominous signs. I remember a few years back, you interviewed the guy who made that strange video. I think it was called I Pet Goat, something like that. And that also has incited an ominous warning regarding the Notre Dame Cathedral that falls down. I don't know if you remember that weird video.
Oh, yeah, I had him on like 10 years ago, and he made a film about the Illuminati. They were shown to me yesterday, and it shows the spire falling on Notre Dame, but not the rest.
Yeah, but the thing is that when it goes down, at that moment, Jesus loses his what he has around his head with these stones of, you know, and that is what it was the most precious relic that you had inside this cathedral. So it's a very ominous sign, definitely. And the synchronicity points out to something that it's a melting pot.
What you're saying is all angles point towards a ceremony, a ritual of some type, and that we're being covered up. We're not being told the truth because we are profane.
Well, of course, is the period of bonfires, as I said it at the beginning of the show. We are going towards Beltane, this celebration. And so I think that by burning this church, by destroying it, We are going towards the end times. They are forcing their way towards the end times. They want to see if their Antichrist is more powerful than the returning Messiah. And this is a very big question mark here, because of course we know how it's going to end up, but the materialistic world that is controlling all this, the people that are putting millions of dollars, millions to reconstruct this cathedral, they think that they can get away with it. They think
Stay there,
that
it's like capture the flag.
Sir Gummy seems to indicate that it's symbolic that the burning of the Notre Dame is accentuating end times, okay? But when you go back, and that might be a very valid assertion, but when you go back and you look at the period during which the Notre Dame was built, the Knights Templar was an all-powerful knights group in France. And they were some of the first, you could say, internationalists about money and so forth. And they were some of the first bankers in their days. But also, so they were in power during the building of the Notre Dame Temple. And so they had a lot to do with it, I'm sure. This pillar of the boatmen figures in because there was a group of boatmen, okay, that fabricated this pillar. And, it's about 3.5, feet at the bottom. And it's about 2.5 at the top. It's about 15 feet tall. And it has inscriptions. It's Gaulish in the sense that Gaul was the country occupied by the Celtic tribe people that Romans came in and pushed over and took out. So this pillar of the boatmen contains not only, you could say Celtic gods and goddesses, but also Romans. It's a combination. So this particular, you could say, boatman group were using that, okay? It was containing 16 carved images from the Greco-Roman pantheon. Celtic divinities inscriptions highlighted in red ochre and so forth. And while digging under the choir of the cathedral, Notre Dame, in order to excavate a tomb for the Archbishops of Paris, workers unearthed the pillar. So it had been down there since, we believe, about 14 A.D. And Letitia, it was the name of Paris before it became Paris, the name renamed later. So, and it was home to about 10,000 people at the time. But this boatman group is who dedicated this to Caesar Augustus, I believe, at the time. So it had been down there a number of years until it was discovered, I believe, in about 1710. It was restored between 1999 and 2003. But what we're having here now is a battle between Islam, Catholicism, you could say Protestantism, Christianity, Judaism, and these different religions are vying for control and dominance, okay? You have the rise of Zionism in the late 1800s that culminated eventually in 1948 of the establishment of the State of Israel. So you could see the Judeo-Christian combination of these two words were proffered out there very repeatedly and very frequently. Getting back to the Knights Templar, they were eventually deposed by the Catholic Pope at the time and the French King. And their goal, they were arrested nationwide. Their goal was sought out, which they didn't get it. I think the Knights had gotten word and smuggled it out of France. But also this is where we get Friday the 13th is when all this went down, Nimalay was eventually executed and burned at the stake very slowly. And he swore that before the year out, the Pope and the King would be gone, and they were. So there was a curse put out by Molay before he perished there at the stake, and they burned it very slowly. So Notre Dame, because of the accumulation of under Constantine, of the consolidation of the known religions at the time, they took the Christian and put together Mithraism and Sol Invictus and so forth, and came up with Catholicism, see. And the Catholic Church has always been good at taking over, like they did when the Romans and came in to Gaul. See, they started taking over, and this was a pattern. You know what I mean? That the Church followed religiously later. The Church and both the Romans set the model out. They would come into a nation and start using the existing power structure and religious structure to take over the area and start dominating, and then they would introduce their own gods and goddesses into the into the arena, and that's the way that they begin to govern and so forth. Our next clip this evening is going to be an interview on The View of Joe Biden. Okay. He said something about not a whisper of scandal. And we're going to play the first 4 or 5 minutes of that. And then we're going to give a list out of the scandals that were experienced during the Obama administration. And it's going to open your eyes. So here we go with Joe Biden on The View.
Presidential candidate, none other than the legendary Joe Biden. We're so excited that you're here. Joe, I have to ask you, what took so long to get into the race? We're so happy you finally announced.
Well, you know, let me ask the audience, aren't these campaigns awful long to begin with? Huh? You know what I mean? It's not till February the first vote cast, and so I don't think it's too long, and I made it clear then from the beginning that if I was going to do this, and the family was pretty sure we were going to do this a long while ago, it's a long road. So I think this is plenty of time. Mm-hmm. Plenty of time.
Well, you said something yesterday in your announcement video that really brought tears to my eyes. You said that we are in a battle for the soul of this nation, and I felt that in my soul. What did you mean by that?
What I mean by that is we are not, this is not who we are the way we're treating people. It's not who we are as a nation when we're talking about things like the reason for your problem is the other. It really is what I said, and I really mean it. I wrote an article at the time in the Atlantic magazine back when Charlottesville happened, and saying that, this is not who we are. There's an American creed. It's about decency, honor, including everyone, leaving no one behind. But the idea to compare these racists and not condemn them and the neo-Nazis and compare them to people who are genuinely decent Americans coming forward and saying, stop this. I don't remember that ever happening in an administration before in a long and well over 100 years. I mean, I just found myself thinking, and by the way, I traveled around the world an awful lot as vice president, and since then I have as well. And the rest of the world, I mean, they look at us like, my God.
What happened to America?
But you've spoken about it. We've not led merely by the example of our power. It's the power of our example.
Yeah.
That it really has been the power of our example. I mean, your dad, not a joke. Your family, it's example. It's why the rest of the world's followed us. And they're looking like, my Lord, what's going on?
We know that you served as President Obama's vice president for the full 8 years. And yet, yesterday
you... Surprise, all eight?
I know.
I'm joking.
As far as I'm concerned, those were very successful 8 years for both of you and for the country. But you said yesterday, I asked President Obama not to endorse.
Yeah, well, look, why? The president, everybody knows... I think everybody knows we didn't only serve together, but our families are close. We became very close personal friends. I mean, it's as some of the vice presidential scholars and presidential scholars have written it, that they think there's very few, probably no other administration where the president and vice president became as personally close. I grew to respect him, and he is just a man of great honor and discipline and his family. He and my wife and Michelle are close friends. They were talking to each other the other day. They went over to see each other the other day. So I didn't want it to look like he was putting his thumb on the scale here. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that I'm going to do this based on who I am, not by the president going out and trying to say this is the guy you should be with. So that's why I asked him not to. I'm incredibly proud to have served with him. The thing I'm proudest of is we're each in a different part of the country, and we were each talking to groups of people that were being televised. And at the same day, purely coincidentally, we got asked the question, what are you proudest of in your administration? And know what I said? It turns out he said the same thing, and probably a little more clearly than I did. That not one single whisper of scandal.
Not one single
whisper.
Here we go again. We're going to replay the ending of this interview on The View. So here we go right now with what Joe Biden said about not a whisper of scandal. So here we go now.
Not one single whisper of scandal.
Going to tick off a list here of the scandals under the Obama administration. The IRS targeted Obama's enemies and denied confirmation of tax-free entities. Benghazi was a total sham. They used a Muslim video and they lied about it. Susan Rice put that forward on multiple talk shows that following weekend. Watching the AP, the Justice Department formed a massive cult of Associated Press reporter phone records as part of a leak investigation. The Rosengate suggested Fox News reporter Joan Rosen is a criminal. Potential Holder, perjury, Eric Holder, the ATF Fast and Furious, potential Holder, perjury too. It goes on and on. Veterans Affairs in Disney World, Solyndra went broke. The new Black Panthers was accused of using a racial double standard and failing to pursue a voter intimidation case against the Black Panthers, waging war all by himself. Obama said, I don't need I would just go around the Constitution and so forth and so on. I'll pass my own laws, the hacking of Cheryl Atkinson's computer, an American political prisoner, get rid of inconvenient IGs, influence peddling. Okay, that's just a few. Then we get into an article here in National Review by Andrew C. McCarthy about the Obama administration's Uranium One scandal. And here's what he says about that. And what happened was that Hillary, as Secretary of State, had the power to approve the establishment and the sale of certain resources and assets that the government had to foreign entities. And they sold this stuff off to Uranium One, which actually became a Russian dominant uranium resource company worldwide now. And the Uranium One scandal is not only a principal Clinton scandal, it is an Obama administration scandal, is what McCarthy says. Now, in addition to all of these scandals set out here, we've got a scandal that that Hillary and them set off and put together. We're moving towards a greater degree of truth and evidence here, but it appears that Hillary and Obama and all these people got together and are trying to deny. And we're spying on Trump, using, FBI resources and other intelligence resources. So they weaponized some of the most powerful federal governmental agencies to start spying on Trump and to take away his rights and also to deny the legitimacy of his presidency, his presidential, you could say, power. So here we go. That's real interesting is that we had a recent Time sponsored, interview with Hillary, and she's saying some amazingly just incorrect things. I mean, outright distortions of reality. And so here we have with Hillary being interviewed about the future, how we can keep the Russians from doing what they did. And oh yes, those Russians interfered and so forth. But, you know, Uranium One is the fact that Hillary and them sold 20% of our uranium resources to the Russians, ending up in the Russians' hands today. And that is a scandal that possibly has not been, you know, investigated at the depth it should. But here we go with Hillary just glossing over everything.
In her 2015 Time 100 tribute to Hillary Clinton, Lorraine Powell Jobs wrote, "When she's standing up for the rights of women and girls, she's speaking not only of gender, but also of justice and liberty." As Hillary Rodham Clinton has always made clear, these values are universal values, and fulfilling them for her and for really all of us is not only a practical pursuit, but a moral pursuit. We also may talk a little about politics. So it's my pleasure to welcome Hillary Rodham Clinton. You're wearing Time Red.
Is that what it is?
Well, maybe not.
Happy,
I'm a little colorblind.
To. Happy to. Right.
Thanks for being here. I want to start in the news. You were on the stage at the Women in the World Summit 10 mm-hmm. days ago, and you said, "We deserve to see the Mueller report."
Right. Right.
We've seen it, or most of it.
Right.
Start with the second sentence. Let me read you the second sentence. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it. "The Russian government interfered in the 2016 presidential election in a sweeping and systematic fashion."
Right.
Second sentence.
Yeah, well, that is the main story, and it's a story that needs to be told and retold over and over again, because we were the subject of a foreign adversary's attack, an attack on our election, an attack on our sovereignty, an attack on our democracy. And you can try to figure out everything that did happen, and we're a long way from knowing, because we need to get the full report, the unredacted version, and certainly the Congress deserves to get it. But I think it's fair to say that this is not just about a reckoning with the recent past. This is about what is going on today and the threats to our next election, to our defense as a nation. So, Edward, I think the report is long, and it obviously takes time to wade through it, but especially for this group, it's something that every American who cares about holding our adversaries accountable, looking to prevent what happened from ever happening again, should take the time to go through. And I'm really of the mind that the Mueller report is part of the beginning. It's not the end. Maybe as Churchill famously said, it's the end of the beginning, because there's still so much more that we should know and that we should act upon. And obviously that's what the Congress is trying to figure out what to do right now.
Given the very thin margin in some pivotal states, do you think, knowing what we know now, Russian interference may have swayed the election?
Well, let me say what I believe to be one of the best analyses of the election done by Kathleen Hall Jamieson, the very authoritative expert on elections at the University of Pennsylvania, who came out with her book, Cyber War, that studied both the social media attack and the hacking and weaponization of stolen material.
And it's her conclusion that it did affect the outcome. And I think it's pretty hard to argue against that because it was such a full-throated attack that was aimed at propagandizing people, dividing our country, creating all kinds of disruptions from phony protests and demonstrations to all kinds of agents and bots acting as though they were Americans debating politics. So I think that if you piece all of it together, what was the polling information given to the Russians, what was done with the hacking of the DNC, not the emails, but the information stored in the cloud about persuadable targeted voters. You just began to piece it all together, and I think Professor Jameson reached the right conclusion that it certainly had an impact.
Yes, I think the emails that Assange through WikiLeaks exposed did have an impact, and it lost her the election because it exposed what was really going on in her, you could say, manipulation of the DNC. And also, there was the DNC was financing the Steele dossier, which in fact was being financed by Hillary indirectly through the DNC. So, and also, Bernie Sanders got cheated by Hillary. So in the primaries, and that's a proven fact. So we're talking about someone sitting up here talking about the Russians affecting the election, and then that gave it to Trump. Actually, the Uranium One she was involved with during her tenure as Secretary of State was collusion with the Russians. And eventually the Russians ended up with a majority of the uranium, you could say, dominance. Two big mines in Kazakhstan they ended up with, which are two of the biggest uranium mines in the world. So her collusion with the Russians appears, I should say, I can't say this conclusively, though there's other evidence, but her possible collusion with the Russians and the establishment of giving them the 20% of our uranium to Uranium One resulted in the Russians gaining superior dominance of uranium production worldwide. So she's not right. Now, I'm going to end this with Richard Dolan, and his father was a policeman in New York. He has some very poignant comments about his dad and about 9/11.
This is the cap that was given to me by my dad. After my father retired as a New York City police officer, he was hired as a fire safety director at the World Trade Center. He worked there from 1994 until 9/11. It's a cool cap. I don't often wear it. I remember all that day trying to find out what happened to my father. But of course the phones were down. And at the end of that day, finally, other family members told me that he had the day off. A very nice man that my dad shared his job with was killed that day instead. My father was one of the lucky ones, I guess, but that day did something to him. And as the years went by, what it did to him just kept getting worse, because really what it did is it sucked all the idealism, all the belief, all the hope right out of him. My father, who had instilled so much idealism in me, well, I just watched it evaporate. And if you're old enough to remember that day, you'll never forget it. The morning of September 11, 2001 changed the world. We learned that day that four commercial airliners had been hijacked by terrorists, that three of the aircraft had hit their targets, the two largest towers of the World Trade Center in New York City, the Twin Towers, and the Pentagon in Washington. The fourth airliner, we were told, crashed near the very small town in Pennsylvania called Shanksville. And we were told that it was probably headed for the White House. On that day, about 3,000 people were killed. And the images of the people jumping out of the Twin Towers, and then the images of those two towers falling, collapsing, disintegrating. This is really one of the most haunting images of our time and of my lifetime. That day, President George W. Bush and his team, including Vice President Dick Cheney, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, and many others told us that America had been attacked by terrorists. They immediately told us this, and they immediately told us that a man named Osama bin Laden and his organization, which was called Al-Qaeda, and no one had really heard of Al-Qaeda much before, that they had carried this out. And it's very helpful to remember, by the way, that for quite some time after that attack of 9/11, Bush's team also tried blaming 9/11 on another guy, Saddam Hussein, the president of Iraq. And they were so successful at this that millions of Americans really honestly thought that Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were the same guy. Anyway, within a month of 9/11, the United States had invaded Afghanistan, where we were told Osama bin Laden was hiding out in a cave. About a year and a half after that, the U.S. also invaded Iraq and proceeded to destroy that nation. And even though by then the U.S. government had admitted Iraq had had nothing to do with the attack. Now, if you remember that day, you'll also remember that no one was allowed to question what we were told. President Bush actually himself said that he would not tolerate crazy conspiracy theories about 9/11. You remember that. And the entire media establishment completely conformed with his wishes because they didn't go there. Right on the heels of that trauma, the U.S. was subjected to another trauma, and that was the anthrax attacks. And maybe some people don't remember or know too much about that anymore. I can tell you that at the time, this was every bit as traumatizing to people as 9/11. And out of this 1-2 punch to the gut, we ended up with the USA Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act, and the never-ending series of laws that have year after year eviscerated our rights as citizens. Privacy, gone. The right to habeas corpus, gone if the government labels you as a terrorist. A culture of conformity has spread from the mainstream media to the very fabric of our society. Rigid ideological mindset that has replaced the political with the cultural. It's like, don't question our politics, just focus on culture, language, race, identity. Stay divided, fight each other. Meanwhile, we'll gobble up the rest of the world and your rights too while we're at it. Now look, there are countless analyses about why the official explanations of 9/11 and the anthrax scare aren't just wrong, but an insult to our intelligence. And I'm going to go over some of that. But that's only part of my purpose today. Because we have now lived with this lie for 17 years. An entire generation has grown up into young adulthood who didn't live through that day, who don't remember the world before, who've grown up with this event as the great backdrop of everything that's followed. They've grown up in the world created by 9/11.
Go to the YouTube and look up Richard Dolan, 17 years of lies, 9/11, 17 years of lies, and listen to this whole presentation on the video. But he's saying that this is the worst thing, in my opinion. Here's my own, you know, you could say summary of what he was saying in there. It may not be his exact words, but these are mine. And I believe that 9/11 and the attack that occurred that day on those buildings, and it didn't take down just building the North and South Tower. It took down other buildings that were on the main site, and Building 7 came down later that afternoon. But I believe that that was a single one event that culminated in the establishments of a police state in this country, because nothing has gone right since then. The intelligence agencies have gotten even more power. There's even the Homeland Security been established. We've got the Patriot Act. We've got one law after another that was established. And I just don't think I believe that today that 9/11 was the single most important event in the United States, in the history of this, of America, of the United States. But it was the worst event that's ever occurred. So it must be looked at. A lady by the name of Fran Schur, and it's on A&E, it's the Architects and Engineers, truth, 911truth.org. You'll go in there. We've had and repeated our interview that Charlotte and I had with Fran. And we have her particular angle on this is the psychology of 9/11. And that's where I think Richard Dolan in his recent video on the 17 years of lies since 9/11, he did this last year, so it was 17 years. It's coming up to be 18 years. It's coming September. But anyway, he's saying that we've had 17, 18 years going on 18 now of lies since 9/11. And it's just been just traumatic for this country, for our liberty and freedoms. And I would have to absolutely agree with him there. So we've had one thing after another that has taken away our liberties and freedoms. And we've had more. The surveillance state has grown very strong, stronger and stronger. And the police state, as a result of that, has grown stronger. And then the same police state here that we have today was utilized, it appears to be utilized by the Democrats to begin to spy on Trump and to use, to weaponize, you could say, these agencies and these intelligence operatives working within the FBI and the State Department. And excuse me, I should say, we have evidence now that there were top-level FBI and top-level Justice Department people working together that were executing, you could say, a plan to take down the Trump administration. So we're ongoing on this. It's unfolding now. President Trump just recently, Sean Hannity, quizzed him about whether or not he's going to declassify material like the FISA, you know, with the applications. And he said explicitly in the answering that question posed by Sean Hannity that, yes, he does fully intend to declassify the FISA applications, but he said he intends to declassify a whole lot more. Now, I don't know, you know, Sean Hannity didn't pick up on that because he didn't want to, you know, be trying to, you know, interrogate our president, you know, Trump. But it appears that Trump is not only going to declassify some of the FISA information, but he's also going to be declassifying a lot of other. There were interviews that Sean Hannity asked him about whether or not he was going to classify some FBI interviews. And I would think that that's going to be included. I can't say, you know, just absolutely that's the fact. But anyway, that interview went real well. We have what's setting up in this country is Fox and Hannity and you could say Tucker Carlson and, McCallum there, and others. And, Bongino, he's on there a lot. We've got, just Ingram is there. Laura Ingram is there. We have Bream, you know. We have a lot of people that are beginning to stand up, and there's more and more information. We have Tom Fenton coming out telling us that there's just a greater and greater amount. And we're going to end up with a real short interview here at the end. So here we go on what they said Friday.
Extraordinary at any level. What is your take now with this new revelation? Is this something par for the course, or does this take it as a change, as a turn into someplace quite different?
Well, if the evidence is there, and I would like to see the explanations for these text messages, but if the evidence is there, I don't know how you explain these messages. It does appear as though they are trying to plant a mole within the transition team to spy on the Trump campaign. And we already know, as Bill Barr pointed out, to great controversy, that the Trump campaign was being spied on. There was electronic surveillance. There was a confidential informant. And now, apparently, there may have been a mole. So, look, the president was correct when you played the comment a moment ago. This was an attempted coup, a silent, nonviolent coup based on phony information to drive him from office. And you know.
Extraordinary. You know, Tom, your organization, Judicial Watch, has been pushing for years, you know, like a dog just that will not let go. And some of us, and as some individuals, some Americans think, well, this can't be happening. This is crazy talk. And yet now, every day, there seems to be something more remarkable. With the work that you've done, what do you think we can expect? And where would something like this ultimately go? What can the American people are resilient, but what do you think we can expect as we move forward here?
Well, the more we learn, the worse it looks in terms of the Spygate coup effort against President Trump. The FBI right now is hiding text messages of Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, and Lisa Page from Judicial Watch. So I'm glad Congress is able to get some of them, but there are others that are still out there. And on top of that, you start off talking about the presidential campaign. You have to remember that the Democratic Party apparatus was involved in this. The Democratic National Committee spent money on this effort to overthrow the president by working with Russia intel. They were meeting with the FBI general counsel just shortly before the election, the lawyer for the DNC and Hillary Clinton. Joe Biden was in this infamous early January 2017 Oval Office meeting mm-hmm. with Barack Obama and Susan Rice and James Comey, where they all talked excitedly
He's
about
right
the dossier
there.
Just before Comey was launched by Obama
yeah.
at then-elect President-elect Trump with this extortive scheme through the dossier.
I think we're going to be seeing an effort to make it seem as though Joe Biden was dropped in from the planet Mars somehow and has never been involved in any of this. But he's been involved in a great deal. You know, he's an experienced man, so he knows what's been going on. For I think all of us also, when we deal with things like this, and people say, oh, they mention Watergate, but this is exclusively different. Watergate was a team of people for and the president involving a reelection, trying to get information on the opponent and all of that. This is an agency, the law enforcement, the highest law enforcement of the nation, colluding and spying and working to change an election that was legal and to usurp a duly elected president. That is something we've never seen before. Would you agree?
Post leaving the Obama administration have been, you know, their absolute opposition to this president. And certainly I think it is evident in the ways in which we see the abuse of power of the Department of Justice, the FBI, and our intelligence agencies.
Yeah, you know, thank you. I do think, Greg, that we finally have, with the Mueller report done, we finally have a sense that, all right, this is serious business and that we can actually look at it without being afraid
sure.
and with the seriousness of taking care of business, that it's not really about Trump. It's not even a partisan issue. This is about what can happen in a power framework where there's been no accountability for generations. Do you think we're finally at this point that we can do this and that we will do it in looking at it seriously and completely?
If I were James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, Brennan, Clapper, I would be very, very worried and not sleeping very well. The Inspector General has spent a year examining the origins of the Trump-Russia collusion investigation.
You know, we normally see government investigations,
this
you know, committee
different.
Stuff, and it never becomes anything.
This,
there is never a result.
I think you will see criminal referrals in the next 60 days from the IG over to the Department of Justice. Bill Barr has made it abundantly clear he is serious about undertaking a legitimate investigation because he realizes the evidence appears to be there that at the FBI in particular, there was a cesspool of corruption among the upper echelons.
The highest levels. And this is our chance as the American people to say to everyone in the political field that we're serious about taking care of these issues, that there will be repercussions because our infrastructure, it relies on a legitimacy that the American people give to it because we trust them.
We're commentators, but when you talk about Greg Jarrod, who's written a fine book, Tom Fitton and others, they begin to chime in, and they're looking at more and more proof and evidence of what the conclusions that they expressed this evening on Friday, last Friday, on Sean Hannity's program. So we're beginning to see some very, very substantial evidence brought forward. And they're saying, and Greg Jarrod said it can't be ignored. But, you know, if the way I see it, too, though, is that Trump was adamant Thursday evening when Sean Hannity interviewed him about declassifying things. Right now, there's been a recent poll, the latest poll about what the American public are thinking about impeachment has gone down, dropped down to about 37%. So the public at large seems not to be able to, there's a lessening demand or feeling in the public at large that there needs to be an impeachment of Trump. And of course that fell down because the Mueller report came out, then the poll was taken. So you could say the drop off in people wanting or demanding or thinking there should be an impeachment trial, so to speak, or an impeachment process is lessening. So that's positive for Trump. Now Trump's out there hammering away, you know, at being spied on, and that's what, you know, these interviewers said this evening on the Sean Hannity, well, last Friday on the Sean Hannity program. So it's getting dicey. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we tried to set out, started out with the Notre Dame, put in there the Pillar of the Boatmen, which was a monument that they found down below the nave there in Notre Dame. Some people are saying that it was arson. Others are saying that it represents some kind of a turnaround or an end times thinking. And even there are people saying the Muslims did it. Who knows? But we don't have a final word on the fire right now. There's been $1 billion that's been pledged. The people out there on the yellow vest, you could say, protest or saying, look, what are you going to do with all $1 billion when the poor people of France need to lessen the taxes, take the taxes down? And Macron is saying, oh, I'm going to do this and that, because he's finally realized that the people in France are fed up with taxes and control. So this is getting to be very, very, very tenuous over there. And they're finally realizing that these other countries, in Italy and other countries and Hungary earlier, are fed up with these big, strong, overly taxed governments. But they promised them a lot of social benefits too. So they got caught with a declining economy and production versus the Far East and China and all that, with much cheaper labor. And they got caught in a bind, you know what I mean? A non-competitive bind is what European Union got caught up in. Their ability to perform and produce because of their higher labor cost and all of their red tape about employment and so forth, and the benefits that they promised their employees. This all culminated in a labor pricing themselves out of the labor market in relationship to the Far East, China, and so forth, India. So that's what the battle is right now, is that European Union is trying to shore up their financial viability, and they're just cutting back on everything they can, but they still want to try to keep the European Union together. And that remains to be seen whether or not the UK will remain or not. They're pushing for another vote, saying, oh, that's the real a democratic way, is to have another vote, see. And so they don't want UK to leave, but that's probably the best thing for them to do, is to leave. Good night. Thank you very much. God bless everyone.